This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Scores. Josh Bailey, as Mayfield did a good job to get that puck back in behind his own net and get it out towards center ice. And then Bailey protected, made sure he was across center, across the Jets line, and he sends it toward the open cage. And it's a empty netter scored by the New York Islanders.
Oh. Josh Bailey into the empty net, and with that, the Winnipeg Jets have lost their third game in a row. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets and the struggles of the Jets over the last week. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. A week that was not a successful week for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, and really unfortunate, guys, because, you know, after watching that first period, first of all, the Jets could have easily had one or two more goals, but you could say the same thing in the second period for the New York Islanders, right? So, I mean, it was just a very disappointing, you know, second and third period in that game. And absolutely, Drew, I mean, the Jets are in the middle of a bad losing streak, and it's even worse that it's at home. But, you know, you look at, you know, some of the periods that they've been able to put together, and it's quite puzzling. And I realize that the penalty kill is an issue, and, you know, the Jets are missing some bodies. And right now on defense, I mean, there is no better time for Sammy Niku to get healthy and come back and either play for the Moose first or come right back and play for the Jets. Because, you know, right now you have defensemen that at the beginning of the year, you know, and I'm talking about even before the season started, going back to training camp, you didn't think that you would be playing guys like Anthony Boteto and Dmitry Kulikov, you know, the types of minutes that they're playing. You would expect them to be playing, you know, 12, 13 minutes, not 19, 20, 21 minutes. And then when you're talking about, you know, Josh Morrissey and Neil Pionk, obviously, you know, a guy like Morrissey, you expected him to be playing, you know, big time minutes. But, you know, Neil Pionk, we weren't really sure. And, you know, Pullman, of course, is paired up with Morrissey now, but we've seen Morrissey and Pionk. But that game against the Islanders, I thought, was the perfect example where one goal just kind of changed the entire outlook of the game. And that happens often in hockey. But, you know, I thought that the Jets really deserved, you know, a better fate in that game. Not because of, you know, I'm not taking anything away from the Islanders, Dave, but it was just that first period might have been the best period that we've seen the Jets play this year. And I'm not joking. I mean, they were all over the Islanders, and, you know, give Semyon Varlamov a lot of credit for the way he played, because he hasn't had the best start to the season trying to kind of replicate what Robin Leonard did last year for the Islanders. But, I mean, the Jets, I thought that after Matt Barzal opened the scoring for the Islanders, and then they went on the penalty kill, and we know that the penalty kill has been a huge issue for the Jets this year, and, guys, has been a huge issue for the Jets in years past.
It's two years in a row now that the penalty kill has been a problem. Last year, the penalty kill, and we'll talk more about the penalty kill later on in the show, but last year, the penalty kill finished 22nd overall in the NHL. We know right now it's dead last through nine games this season.
And Barzal's second goal that he scored on the power play, it just really seemed to take the life out of the Jets.
The first goal was a power play goal. The second goal,
you're right. The first goal was the power play goal. The second goal that was scored
late in the second period, where they just
the odd man rush.
Where the Jets, where the Jets failed to get the puck in deep.
Yeah, it was Morrissey that unfortunately didn't get it in deep.
Yeah. No, doesn't get it in deep. The puck, you know, is knocked out of the air by Johnny Boychuk. It's immediately transitioned up the ice. This is in the last minute of the second period, or right close to the end of the second period.
17 seconds left.
There you go. And boom, it's 2-1. And the Jets, you know, a team that played a very good first period, to your point there, Ezzy, is all of a sudden down two goals to one. They haven't scored a 5-on-5 goal in now 8 periods of hockey, almost 9 periods of hockey. The last 5-on-5 even strength goal they scored came against early in the first period against the Pittsburgh Penguins last Sunday. So this is a team right now that's struggling to score, has a woeful power play. Lots not going well for
the
Jets right now.
Well, the power play has actually been better.
A woeful penalty kill, lots not going well for the Winnipeg Jets right now, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, you could focus on that for sure, but I'm with Ezzy. I thought it was a really good game. I mean, you're leading 1-0. You know, the score, Varlamov played well. They had outshot them 16-5 in that first period. And it turned out that I think that was like 7 minutes into the second when Barzal scored
7:41.
Yeah, so that was the first shot of the period for the Islanders. So, I mean, the Jets had played a fairly good, almost, you know, 30 minutes of hockey. That's why they say you got to play a full 60. You can't play just a good 30. But the fact is, the Jets had played a fairly good game. And, you know, Barzal's a good player. It was a beautiful shot. But, you know, again, we got to talk about that Kopp, Ehlers, and Connor line. I mean, they were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was a positive.
Which makes it, now they're going to break him up as soon as Brian Little comes back, which we'll talk about the forward lines as well throughout the show.
You know, but again, like I said, it's tough. I mean, look, you win three in a row, then you lose three in a row. I mean, it's one of those situations. It's not, as Izzy said, it's not ideal, especially when you're at home, especially against, you know, some teams. Although it's ironic because then you look, Pittsburgh's been winning. The Coyotes have been winning. So, I mean, these teams that look like they should be maybe, in, you know, 2 points on the board, those teams are doing pretty well right now around the rest of the league. So you're not exactly, you know, beating teams that are easy. And really, the Jets aren't in a position to look at any team. They're not like the Jets from 2 years ago where they could be looking at teams and saying these are lesser than. These are teams that the Jets have to look at and think to themselves, these are teams that are coming in here, and it's not a guarantee that we're going to take 2 points.
Right now, as currently constructed, this Winnipeg Jets team is what, 4-5
mm-hmm.
through their first 9 games?
Yeah.
You know, a decidedly average record. You watch this team night in, night out, and what do you see? You see a decidedly average team that has some positives and some warts. And I think that they are exactly what their record says they are. And I think it's I think it's accurately reflecting what they are as a team. They're not a great hockey team that's getting, you know, that should have a 7-2 record, but they're getting bad luck or they're getting, you know, bad bounces. They're an average hockey team that is going to win some games and then is going to lose some games as currently constructed. That's just what they are.
And they also don't have Brian Little.
Absolutely.
They don't have Sammy Niku. They don't have Dustin Byfuglien.
And that's what they would say, that if they had their full roster, they'd be a better performing team.
Right. But having said that, the Penguins don't have Evgeny Malkin, Nick Bjugstad, Jared McCann. Patrick Hornquist is back in the lineup now, but
everybody's got injuries.
Where are the Penguins in the standings? Right.
The
answer is they're first.
Yeah.
So I mean, the Penguins have a bunch of injuries. When you're talking about Malkin, when you're talking about a future Hall of Famer,
superstar.
So you're not talking about just, you know, an average player. So they're still winning. Mm-hmm. They're still scoring goals. We just saw it the other night. In Winnipeg, they scored 7 on the Jets, but
they beat Dallas last night 4-2.
Well, yeah, and that's why they're in first place. They keep winning. But the point I'm trying to make here is that you're going to have injuries at certain points in the season, whether it's at the beginning of the season like it is now,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, in the midway point of the season or later in the season. But when you're talking about this Jets team, you know, and I think Murat did an excellent job for The Athletic breaking down what's happening defensively on this team, you know, on the topic of how they're doing a good job of standing up the opposition at the blue line. But in zone, they're having issues. And I think when you talk, it goes back to what I said before. I mean, at no point, I don't think, do the Jets want to be using Carl Dahlstrom for 18 to 22 minutes a game. And I think right now, with no Sammy Niku, and obviously Nathan Beaulieu is going to come back, you know, probably in the next couple of weeks, right? We expect. We don't know exactly when, but originally he was supposed to be out for 4 weeks, and it's been 3. So, I mean,
if you do
the math, I mean, Nathan Beaulieu should help out the Jets. Niku should be back eventually, Dave. I mean, it's a little bit indefinite right now.
Didn't play for the Moose last night.
Is not playing.
Is not going to play for the Moose again tonight. So whatever that lingering injury is, or I don't know if he's re-aggravated the injury from training camp.
No, that's Coach Vincent. I mean, now, before we knew it was the groin when it was during training camp, and now it's been modified to lower body injury.
God forbid, but you know the actual injury.
It doesn't really matter. But the fact is that he essentially, well, he didn't practice at all this week. Didn't play last night, and Coach Vince said he's not playing today. So, I mean, you've got a guy who will probably practice. I mean, again, I'm assuming. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But when the Moose resume practice on Monday, we'll see what happens with them, or Tuesday. But anyways, Sammy Niku is a question mark still.
And, you know, going back to what Drew said, Dave, about, you know, you expected kind of the Jets to be around 500 based on the composition of their roster and the injuries and all of that. But how many really good teams have they faced? right? I mean, with the exception of Pittsburgh and the Islanders, and we expect Arizona to be pushing for a playoff spot, I mean, the Jets haven't exactly had a tough schedule. They've played a lot of games, mm-hmm. and I'm not trying to be negative Nelly here, but all I'm saying is, like, they haven't played Tampa Bay. They haven't played Boston. I mean, you haven't played St. Louis, the defending champs. You haven't played Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't played Carolina, who's first in the East right now, right? Like,
you're absolutely right, Ezzy. They have not
Pittsburgh's in second, by the way. Carolina's in first.
Doesn't matter. I mean,
the point is, yeah, Pittsburgh is succeeding despite having a lot of injuries.
Right. But when Pittsburgh came in here last Sunday, you would have thought that they were potentially a vulnerable team. The Jets had beat them the week earlier. You know, they had played the night before like the Jets had. And then Pittsburgh just came in and absolutely wiped the floor with the Jets. And sure, you can chalk that up to maybe, you know, a scheduling factor. Maybe the Jets had finally run out of gas after playing too many games.
It is amazing, though, that the Rangers and the Jets opened the season together.
The schedule
together,
is asinine.
And the Jets have played 9 games, and the Rangers have played 5 now.
The schedule is... NHL schedule maker did an embarrassing job to start the year.
You can't understand... Like, you look at this, and the Rangers played last night, didn't they?
The Rangers lost to Washington last night.
But the point is, so the Rangers had 4 games as of yesterday. The Jets had 9.
The Rangers had four games in 15 nights. Jets had 9 games.
And the crazy part,
nights.
If you think about it, is it should be actually reversed, because a New York team having to go to New Jersey, having to go to Philadelphia,
travels a lot.
It's
easier.
Inconsequential. Mm-hmm. But for the Jets to get on a plane or whatever, again, my heart's not bleeding for them. But the reality is, like, knowing that the Rangers played 4 games as of last night, and the Jets had played 9. Is ridiculous.
If somebody from the Jets organization called up the NHL and said the scheduling department did a lousy job to start the year, I don't think anybody could argue with that. That being said, this Winnipeg Jets team, as to your point about their in-zone defensive zone coverage, you know, you look at the defense that they're putting out there, it shouldn't come as a surprise that they're having trouble in their own zone.
It's almost like they need a guy with the number 33 on his back.
Well, that's certainly a topic we're going to talk about next segment. When you know, the insider trading guy said that, you know, there's, you know, reports that he might be getting closer to coming back, you know, for whatever that report is worth, and we'll talk about it. But, you know, this Jets team, you look at the roster, you look at the players that they have on there, it should be of no surprise that they are struggling, and they are struggling. Now, the offense not having an even strength goal in almost 9 periods of hockey, that's a surprise. That's a problem. When the offense that you thought was going to be the driving force of this team can't score a goal, that's a problem.
Right, and you know, one of the biggest bright spots of, you know, the game against the Islanders, the second game obviously I'm talking about on Thursday, is Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers were completely dominant.
Yes.
When you talk about shot share, and Scotty Billick wrote about that in the Winnipeg Sun. And when Brian Little comes back to the lineup, we don't expect it to be tomorrow, but it could be tomorrow. I just don't see how you break up Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers, because they've just been so good together. I think it's Scheifele, Wheeler, and Laine at 5-on-5 lately that's been a bit of an issue. They've been great on the power play, but I think that, you know, when you're looking at this Jets team, you need that top line to be excellent, and that's why the argument for breaking up Scheifele and Wheeler is starting to surface again. We don't know if Paul Maurice is going to explore that, but if things keep going the way they've been going,
you can't score.
You've got a red-hot Edmonton team coming in tomorrow, and we know that Draisaitl and McDavid are basically playing out of their minds right now. So, I mean, the top line has got to get going.
The Draisaitl McDavid versus the Jets defense tomorrow could be ugly, but we'll talk about that later on in the show. Much more to come about your Winnipeg Jets, but when we return, the TSN report about the growing sense of optimism that Dustin Byfuglien may return, we'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
There's a growing sense of optimism that Dustin Byfuglien may in fact return to the Winnipeg Jets. Now, clearly there's nothing official. There's no guarantee. There's no timeline on when Byfuglien might return, and you're not going to get the Winnipeg Jets to confirm nor deny. It's just a sense that he's more likely to return than not, which is saying something considering all the speculation over the last few weeks. Despite the concerns, though, over the time missed, he would be a welcome addition to a very inexperienced blue line. But I'm thinking from a Jets perspective, time will tell.
TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger on Insider Trading earlier this week addressing the, quote, growing sense of optimism that big number 33 Dustin Byfuglien may return to the Winnipeg Jets blue line. Welcome back. Good morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall.
I didn't bring any Bernstein's today, but I brought Timbits. And again, I asked for mainly chocolate.
Yeah.
I got a 20-pack because I thought the boys would be
more?
Hungry.
Yeah, you normally buy a 10-pack.
Well, you know, I find sometimes when I get the 10-pack,
yes,
it's gone by, you know, the second hour of the show. So ideally, if they had a 15-pack, I would buy the 15-pack, but they don't have a 15-pack, so I bought the 20-pack. And out of 20 Timbits, you know how many chocolate they gave us?
I don't.
Four.
Mm. You see, I'm not a big chocolate Timbit guy, so it doesn't bother me, but I understand your frustration in that you specifically request.
Well, I know Dave likes the chocolate, producer Alex likes the chocolate.
I'm a man on an island, yeah, here. I'm willing to accept that. And I understand as a customer.
You're a birthday cake guy.
I am a birthday cake Timbit guy, you're right. But I do understand as a customer how you would say, I would like majority of these to be chocolate or all of these to be chocolate, and then get frustrated when they're not.
I think it's almost become a game now.
That you think they're trolling Ezzy?
It almost seems like that because, like, every week he's like mainly chocolate. And well, they never give him.
I do call them after the show every Saturday
and
thank them for not giving him all the chocolate.
If we ask for all chocolate, then we get all chocolate. But like, then you have no variety. You got to have, you know, like.
Well, it is the spice of life, as they say.
That's true.
Let's talk about this report from TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger that there's the growing sense of optimism that Dustin Byfuglien might return to the Jets lineup, to the Jets organization. It's October 19th. Far be it from me to criticize Darren Dreger and his reporting, because I'm sure that he has a source who told him that, you know, there is this growing sense of optimism. From my perspective, and call me a cynic, call me jaded.
That, I would call you both those things.
Okay.
I think we're just going to call you Drew.
Fair enough. You can call me that too. You can call me Drew.
Kind of all synonymous.
You could call me Drew the Jaded Cynic if you want. If you really want to.
There's a lot of other things I want to call you, but I really can't call you that on air because it's a family program.
There you go. You know, many of George Carlin's words you can't say on radio. But to me, this might be the Winnipeg Jets organization trying to apply a little bit of pressure to the situation to get Dustin Byfuglien to make up his mind.
I doubt it. I don't know about that.
You know, you disagree with my jaded cynic thesis?
I mean, look, I can see what you're saying. I can see where your theory is coming from. I'm just saying that, like, you got to be careful with this kind of player. He's not your average bear.
Sure.
And I think that, you know,
he's a hungry bear.
Yeah. And I think that the reality is that, look, are the Jets happy? Are the Jets players happy, particularly happy that they don't have him in the lineup and there's this big hole? I suspect not. Not that any of them would admit it. But the reality is, that are they going to welcome him back with open arms if he decides? Absolutely. And I think that, you know, of course you want him there immediately. You wanted him there in October. But I again, looking at this Jets team, how different does it look with 33 in the lineup?
It's a huge hole. And you know, more so even than his performance on the ice, which is so significant, but the energy he brings to a game. I mean, you know, you watch some of these Jets games as of late, and they're missing an edge.
Mm.
And I think a lot of
that. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
I think a lot of that edge can be attributed to Byfuglien's absence. I think it can be attributed to some extent to Brandon Tanev's absence, because whatever Tanev does or doesn't do on the ice is you notice him in that.
He scores OT winners against Colorado.
Well, apparently in some instances he does that, but you do notice that there is a little bit of a. When he's on the ice, at least he's doing something,
mm-hmm,
pro or con. You do notice at least
he's an energy player for sure.
He's an energy player. And there seems to be a lack of energy in their performance as of late. To me, though, and I've said this from the start, it's October 19th. If Dustin Byfuglien was going to find the desire and the fire to return, wouldn't he have already found it? What's going to change?
Well, again,
3 weeks into the season, that hasn't changed already.
Well, I mean, again, we don't know if health is a factor, and if he's fully recovered from what was going on with him last year, then who knows? I mean, that, and that's the whole point. There's a cone of silence around this, so which leads obviously to the speculation, and the speculation in the city, actually, to be honest with you, is insane. But the truth is that
everybody's got a brother who's got a cousin, I mean, who knows a dog walker.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people just say, like, you know, whatever. But the point is that, to me, you know, we don't know that he's fully healed from what was bothering him last year. So but what I'm saying is, so while everybody wants to put a timeline on and some sort of artificial date on a return, whether it's, you know, October 1st, November 1st, December 1st, I'm simply saying that if it is in fact related to that and not, you know, something else, then from his perspective, he may not be ready because he may not physically be ready. And you could say, well, maybe that should be out there. But I'm simply saying that we don't know. So to my mind, it could be that it's just a function of him not being 100% fully ready to play.
And you've nailed it there. You know, you mentioned, Dave, cone of silence, but it's the cone of uncertainty, right? Because I think, you know, if anything, you know, Dregs, when he came out with this, it gave Jets fans optimism when there hadn't been a lot of optimism when it came to Buff in a while, right? Because as you said, Dave, we just don't know right now. This is a situation that we've never seen before with the Jets. So when you're talking about, you know, will Buff come back? When will he come back? Like Dave said, I really don't believe there are any internal deadlines when it comes to the Jets or Buff.
Hang on, Izzy, let me stop you right there. Don't there have to be some internal deadlines so that at some point in time, the cap space to improve defense?
No, Drew, absolutely. I think if Buff isn't ready to come back, and we're talking about this in February 2020, then I mean, the Jets aren't going to wait till February 2020.
Yeah, the season's over by then.
Buff season would be over. But
with this defense, if you're planning on continuing to have this defense out there on a regular basis without upgrading it, you're basically taking, you know, a pass on the season.
Well, I really strongly believe that having Sammy Nikku and Nathan Beaulieu, and you can say whatever you want about Nathan Beaulieu, yes, I mean, he's not a top pairing NHL defenseman. Mm-hmm. I think he can play on your second pair, and I think having Sammy Nikku back, he can absolutely play in your top four. So right now, guys, I mean, and again, we don't want to just sit here and make excuses, but when you're missing the entire right side of your defense, Buff, Trouba, Myers, plus you're missing Sammy Nikku and Nathan Beaulieu, two guys that you had penciled in your top six. I mean, yeah, it's stopgap patches and fixes. You know, you get Carl Dahlstrom off waivers. Ville Heinola, most likely, if Buff is in the lineup, if Niku's in the lineup, and if Beaulieu's healthy, most likely Ville Heinola doesn't make this team. I strongly believe that.
You're probably right, but Heinola certainly hasn't been
He's been I would say one of the bright spots. But absolutely. But the point is, I'm in agreement with you that they're going, if things keep going the way that they've been going and the Jets lose, you know, half of their games or more than half of their games, they'll probably have to go outside the organization either via trade or, you know, pick up a guy off waivers. But you know, back to Buff, Drew.
Well, so if there is this growing sense of optimism, as Darren Dreger reported, you know, what is, you know, and this is an impossible question for you to answer, Ezzy, but, you know, quantify a growing sense of optimism. Put a date next to a growing sense of optimism.
But that's the thing. I mean, when you say growing sense of optimism, and I think Darren Dreger is a really good journalist. I think he chooses his words very carefully, and he's a very well-respected guy that he's got to the point where he has for a reason. So I think he picked his words carefully, and he didn't want anybody to think, oh, that means Buff is coming back in 2 weeks. He never said that. He just said there's a growing sense of optimism. So if you're a glass half full type of guy, Dave, mm-hmm. and I think I am, you're thinking, okay, well,
it depends on what's in that glass. It's already been, well, yeah. You drank it already.
Yeah, the glass needs to be put in the dishwasher. But when you're talking about Buff, I think, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we were thinking, oh, yeah, Buff is done. He's never going to play for the Jets again. He might never play in the NHL again. But again, this is all speculation. It's all conjecture. And if you're a glass half empty type of person, you're saying, well, if Buff hasn't skated in the last 2 months, how is he going to come back anytime soon? Like, the earliest he can come back is maybe December, right? Or January. So, I mean, it depends how you look at this. But right now, going back to what we just said, we don't really know. So everybody has a different opinion. Everybody mm-hmm. hears something else about, you know, oh, I heard Buff is coming back because of this. Or I heard, you know, Buff isn't coming back because of this. The reality is nobody knows except Dustin Byfuglien and maybe Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I don't even know if Chevy knows at this point. But hopefully Buff does come back because, as we talked about before, the Jets could really use him right now.
There's no question they could really use him. I mean, I'm still in the glass half empty portion of the populace that says that doesn't think Bufflin's coming back, despite the Darren Dreger report, despite anybody wanting to read the tea leaves in a positive nature. I just still say you're 3 weeks into the season. You know, there's been no sign that he's skating. There's been no sign that he's getting any closer to returning. So what is going to change? And that's my perspective on it. And I have no particular insight. That's just my opinion and my reading of the situation.
Well, and I think there are quite a few people that are in your camp. And I think with every day that passes, the glass gets emptier.
Well, but when do the Jets? I know, to Dave, and you make a valid point that, they can't push too hard because you don't want to necessarily see the backlash from Bufflin or his representatives. But at some point in time, the Jets need to get him to make a decision, don't they? I mean, you're sitting here 9 games into the season. You're more than 10% way through the schedule. You're 4-5. Right now, you're in a 3-game tailspin where things aren't going well. You either need him to come back into your lineup and inject that energy and inject that boost and supercharge your lineup, or you need to just realize that it's time. You need to cut bait and move forward with whatever it's going to be.
Again, though, I would go back to my position that we don't know from a health perspective,
right?
If he's ready to go, and so from their point, you would think that they would say, I mean, again, who knows? Like maybe they would bring him back, put him on LTIR. Like we don't
even
know.
Would provide a fair bit of clarity,
right? Which leads me to believe that in essence maybe that isn't the case, because why wouldn't they at least then you have them on the roster, that sort of thing. So look, I guess what the problem with the way the current situation is, again, it leads to conversations that we're having on the radio and people are having on the streets, and everybody's talking about Dustin Bufflin and what he's going to do. But again, as to Ezzie's point, there's probably two people in this world, and I mean aside from Dustin Bufflin's family, who know what he's thinking and what he's planning on doing, and that's him and Kevin Cheveldayoff. And I suspect those two aren't running around telling the entire world, because look, everybody's going to try and say, oh, I know something. But at the end of the day, those are the guys, and until we hear otherwise, and like Paul Maurice already said, you're not hearing it from me. It's going to be in a statement from Kevin Cheveldayoff. So that's really how we're going to hear about this Dustin Bufflin situation resolving one way or the other.
We always encourage participation on the show from the audience. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve, or you can be like our texter who texted us from Saskatchewan saying, what the key to our Timbit order is, you need to order 10 chocolate and 10 variety, and that's how we will get the numbers that we want in terms of our Timbits.
I like that solution. Yeah, you have to be exact. You have to let them know exactly how many you're looking for, because if you're not exact, then you could end up getting 2, 3, 7.
And there's a problem that you're in. When we come back, Trevor Kidd is going to join us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. A lot of good comments coming in there. We'll read them a little bit later on in the show. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, is illegalcurve.com. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Trevor Kidd. You know Trevor, of course, as a radio analyst here on TSN 1290. Trevor, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Great to be. Love hearing that hotline sound. So, no, thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Trevor. Always love having you on with us. You know, we got to start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets and what has been a lousy week for the Jets in terms of their on-ice performance. Losers of 3 straight. And, the defensive shortcomings, when you look at this team, aren't overwhelmingly a surprise. You know, they're beat up on the back end. To me, what's surprising, Trevor, is that they have not scored an even strength goal in almost 9 periods of hockey. Mm. How big of a concern is that from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you look at, I mean, you have to start, in my opinion, you start with the back end, as you mentioned. And all the change, right? And there's a ton of subtractions there, and there's some shortcomings, and we can talk here for a few hours on some of those issues. When you look at when you talk about the defense, you look at again those shortcomings. Where do you look from there in regards to perhaps masking the issue, trying to buy some time in regards to what is going on there in the back end. And certainly, you know, two things come to mind: either goaltending, your goalie's going to have to either pitch shutouts every night or pretty darn close to that. And then, you know, you talked about the Winnipeg Jets, what they have in regards to talent, outscoring the opposition, outscoring the issues that you might say that are in the back end. So, to me, the goaltending has been, in my opinion, good in regards to what they've been giving up from a defensive perspective. You know, at the end of the day, I really just don't think. I mean, the Jets are going to score goals this year, but if the expectation is that the Winnipeg Jets are going to outscore the back end and what's going on there each and every night, then we're in for a long season. Specifically, we look, certainly it hasn't been perfect for the Winnipeg Jets in the last couple of three games in regards to putting the puck in the back of the net. To me, you break it down. I thought, when you go to the last game here, that they did a pretty darn good job of pucks and finding that middle part of the ice. And to me, that was one of the issues when you just look at a sample size of the three games. Go to the Phoenix game, and to me, a lot of the stuff was from the perimeter. A lot of stuff was not in those hard areas of the ice. And to me, I make a comparison to the Nashville Predators. You know, when the Predators play and they're a team that gets the puck in deep and they win a lot of board battles, and the Jets have been doing that, but when that puck goes back to the point and they get that shot to the net, there is absolutely carnage in front of the net, right? There's battles, there's bodies on the ground. And to me, that is the one thing that the Winnipeg Jets have been struggling a little bit in the last three games. Now, with that being said, the last game that they played 48 hours ago was decent in that regard. You saw, you know, Ehlers in front of that, Connor in front of that, Scheifele with some chances in tight. Wheeler was in there. I mean, Andrew Kopp arguably had the best game of the season. He just couldn't find one. So, to me, long-term, when you talk about the offense, what they did, you know, again, two nights ago was good. And to me, over the course of the year, that will translate to more offense and ultimately more goals in front of the net or in the back of the net. But, guys, at the end of the day, if we're just looking at the offense here to each and every single night to outscore the problems in the back end, then, as I mentioned, it's going to be a long year. I mean, Sir Varlama for the Islanders comes in and has a good game. I mean, the goaltending is good. And a lot of teams, you know, like the Islanders, hey, listen, they survived the first period against the Winnipeg Jets the other night, and they had a bit of a pushback in the second and third period, and now we're walking out of there with a victory. So the game, the parity within the game is too good just to expect the Winnipeg Jets to just outscore all the issues every night.
Trev, you never want to use the schedule as an excuse, and you know the Jets, granted, haven't had the toughest competition, but they've played a lot of hockey so far.
Right.
I believe they've played the most amount of games, or they're tied for the most amount of games. You're talking about 9 games in, you know, roughly 13 or 14 days, and you know they didn't have a practice yesterday, but they're going to get to practice today. And is that going to maybe be is that going to be a positive for this team, especially considering how much hockey they've played? And then you've got, you know, Connor McDavid, Dreisaitl, and the Oilers coming in, and it seems like those guys are putting up 2 points each every night.
Add in James the big deal Neil to that McDavid and Dreisaitl conversation. This guy's on fire too. And no, for sure, I think that there is a part of it, and certainly no one's going to say that this is an excuse. But the schedule, to me, when you look at and when we talk about training camp, so much with Maurice talking about training camp was defending as a 5-man unit, right? And to me, that was the focus on training camp. And generally speaking, the support, let's get into the defensive zone. To me, the support in regards to the forwards coming back has been, relatively speaking, good. So a defenseman gets the puck behind the goal line, is looking for that breakout. The wingers are down around the hash marks, they're not blowing the zone. The centerman is, you know, peeling around that blue paint and being an outlet, being option. To me, that has been good. When you get into the neutral zone and talking about, you know, team defense and systems, the neutral zone, to me, that the third guy high in the offensive zone, to me, has been very responsible and very accountable. the support in regards to allowing a defenseman to stand up in the neutral zone to have a good close gap. That has to do with your forwards as well and having that support. To me, that has, relatively speaking, been good. The breakdowns have been, in my opinion, the routes, and that let's just draw an imaginary circle, pull it 10 feet in diameter in front of the blue paint in the defensive zone. That is the area that is killing the Winnipeg Jets at the moment, in my opinion. And a lot has to do with just awareness, and with that, experience. And when you look at it, just simple things, being on the inside positioning and defending versus the outside, right? Having that head on a swivel in regards to, okay, where's the danger? Where's the routes here? And you go back to, I believe it was the Arizona game here where Josh Morrissey was running his route to the top of the circles where he didn't need to be up in that area. So it's, to me, this is the practice time. Defensive zone coverage versus systems is what needs to be worked on right now. And, I mean, obviously, if you're going to talk about a system, Maurice has mentioned, you know, the PK and talking about that, and certainly the power play. But to me, the defensive zone system has been pretty good for the Winnipeg Jets. It's that area in front of the blue paint that's hurting them at the moment.
So, Trev, I'm asking you to put on your coaching hat, because Brian Little could be making his return to the lineup on Sunday. And, you know, we've saw a phenomenal performance from Andrew Kopp, Kyle Connor, and Nikolai Ehlers. So if you're Coach Maurice and you've got a veteran center coming back, and we know Coach Maurice talked about when Brian Little comes back, he's going to keep him at center. So what do you do when Brian Little comes back to the lineup, Trev?
Oh, guys, I know this is a tough one, right? We can come up with so many options here on perhaps what to do with Brian Little, but honestly, I don't know what, you know, if we'll all know until he gets out there and gets that game action. I mean, to me, there's something to be said for all the possibilities, right? I mean, I agree with you. Andrew Kopp has looked pretty darn good in that spot, and his trajectory in regards to what's happened since being there, going back to the start of the season, has been good. Like, to me, there hasn't been a where he's fallen off, where that line's looked out of place. I mean, Andrew Kopp has been rock solid in the faceoff dot, arguably one of the best Jet center in regards to faceoff percentages. So, and with that, creating offensive zone time. I mean, he just had a little bit of puck luck and just a little bit of finish. And going back to the last game, he should have had two or three goals. He was in and around it. They were generating. He had the offensive zone time, and then they had the chances in front of the net. So, to me, there's a lot to like with what that line is generating right now. But now, hey, listen, we talk about Brian Little. He's going to step back in. You know, he has the head injury, and then there's the familiarity and comfort of just playing that position and coming back into the lineup. To me, that makes total sense to put him in a spot that he is most familiar with. But, you know, again, on the other hand, maybe we see, and how many times have we talked about, we get into the springtime here and talk about the second line center and talk about Brian Little and the Winnipeg Jets making trades for second line centers. Maybe this is the time to try Brian Little on the wing, to try him on the wing on the third line, perhaps with, you know, a Rossellick or an Adam Lowry and just see what that looks like. So, guys, to me, I'm on the same page as you. I mean, we could talk about this and talk about the scenarios. This will be interesting to see where Coach Maurice ultimately puts Brian Little when he steps back onto the ice in regards to a game situation.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And you know Trevor, of course, as an analyst here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Oilers tomorrow night as the Jets look to get back in the winning column. You know, Trevor, a lot of talk this week about the identity of the Winnipeg Jets. And, you know, Blake Wheeler was asked about the Jets' identity, and he didn't really have a firm answer. From your perspective and in your experience, do teams usually know their identity, you know, at the onset of the season, or does it take, you know, 10 games, 15 games for a team's identity to really become clear? In other words, you know, is it a concern from your perspective that the Jets don't know their identity at this point?
I think they know their identity. Like, to me, the Winnipeg Jets and how they're playing, still, you think back to last year, guys, it's speed. But their identity is playing with speed, whether that be on the offensive side of the puck or the defensive side of the puck. And so to me, that hasn't changed. That is the Winnipeg Jets' identity. You can talk about the power play, the way teams are defending the Winnipeg Jets on their PK is unbelievable. The pressure is something else. I mean, the entries, yeah, they've battled a little bit with the entries, but you just watch a team when they're penalty killing against the Winnipeg Jets. The pressure is something else. So, I mean, that's a part of their identity as well. Is listen, we can't allow the Winnipeg Jets to set up on the power play because it's lethal and they'll kill us. So, to me, the one little component of identity still has to go back to the back end and how they're competing in front of the net. Now, listen, guys, you subtract Dustin Byfuglien from the situation, Trouba from the situation, Myers, Benchirot, like those are four massive guys. Right, and you look at the identity. So a team that was coming in or playing against the Winnipeg Jets knew that, you know, you talk about the hard areas, guys, this is going to be a battle tonight. Like when we're in front of the blue paint and we got Dustin Byfuglien taking hacks at us, or Jacob Trouba, Myers, Ben Chiarot, you know how tough he is in front of the net, right? It was going to be a long night for those forwards in front of the net. To me, that is a little bit different now for the Winnipeg Jets. It could be said it's a lot different. And so, to me, that is where the identity in regards to how the Winnipeg Jets are going to defend still needs to be established.
Trevor, last question for you, and we're obviously talking about the Jets, as we always do, but, you know, we have to give you a shout-out. A couple of weeks ago, you were officially inducted into the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame, and it was a great class. You had, you know, Kelly McCrimmon, Marty Murray, obviously with the Brandon Wheat Kings connections, along with yourself, Barry Shankro. I mean, what was that like for you? And I know, I think Marty played the year after your final year with the Wheat Kings, but obviously you've got a great relationship with Kelly that goes back years. But what was that like to be nominated with a couple of other Wheaties?
First, yeah, I mean, great, absolute honor to be recognized. Yeah, for hockey in Manitoba, it was a real special night. Obviously, my parents were there, and they're a huge part of, you know, you hear hockey players, the sacrifices that parents and families make in any sporting life, but you make a career out of it. Certainly, you look back and you reflect, and very thankful for parents and family, and my wife and my family have been pretty much with me since the start of this all, but you get into the class that Barry Shankro, a part of that, Kelly McCrimmon, you know, Marty Murray, as you mentioned, going back to those Brandon Wheatking days. I mean, when I was playing, the team wasn't so good. And Kelly McCrimmon made that trade to Spokane, and Marty Murray was a part of that trade, guys. So I always joke when I see Kelly that I'm a big part of, you know, the Brandon Wheatking started things around. When they made that trade, I went to Spokane. It was great. I worked it done. Brian Maxwell, Tim Speltz were there. You know, I was hugely thankful for the Spokane Chiefs who went on to win the Memorial Cup that year. But Marty Murray coming back the following season, it turned the Brandon Wheat Kings around. They had, I believe they've only missed the playoffs once or twice since that trade happened. So it was hugely impactful for everybody involved, Marty Murray, Kelly McCrimmon, myself. And it was a lot of fun to be there that night and to all be going in at the same time.
Well, you've always been a Hall of Famer in our books, Trevor, but it's now nice that the province of Manitoba has acknowledged you as one as well. Trevor Kidd joins us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Trevor, always appreciate your time and insight. We'll see you tomorrow evening, buddy.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks so much, Trevor. When we come back, we talk about, what are we talking about? The Jets' woeful penalty kill. How do they improve it, and how is it going to get much worse than it currently is? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now for Bailey, near side. Barzell, slap shot, he scores. Matt Barzell with a one-timer on some good puck movement by the Islanders. That didn't take very long. 16 seconds into the power play, and we're tied at one.
Stop us if you're surprised, but the Jets gave up a power play goal on Thursday night. I believe that was their only the only penalty they took in the game, though, as well, wasn't it? I don't think they had any other penalties aside from the one goal that Barzell scored. So there you go. Matt Barzell scoring for the Islanders on the power play. It only took 16 seconds from the start of the power play to tie the game. We know the Islanders went on to win 3-1 on Thursday night. The Jets' penalty kill continues to be a significant issue 9 games in to the 2019-20 season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Saw the new sign up at Zappia Group headquarters.
Looked nice, very sharp, new sign. And I saw that as well. Check them out there. Next time you're driving by, you can check out their nice new sign. And Frank invited everybody in for a cappuccino, I believe, as well.
Yes.
Not you. You're not invited.
Well, no, we've had cappuccinos there before.
And now you're not invited anymore. That's how it worked.
Frank makes a terrific cappuccino.
It's true. He does. Mauro does too, I assume, yes, as well. But anyways, yeah, check it out, zappiagroup.com. The Jets penalty kill, gentlemen, dead last in the NHL, now operating at a very impressive 56.3% success rate, which is unheard of in how terrible it is. Is this a long-term problem? Like, what's the best-case scenario for the Jets' power play, considering that last season...
Up.
Well, thank you, Dave. But considering that last season, the penalty kill also struggled, 22nd in the NHL at just under 80%, a mark that the Jets would significantly take at this point in the season. So how do they improve this penalty kill?
Yeah, and that is the most important question for this team right now, in addition to overall the amount of shots, the amount of goals they're giving up. But you mentioned, I mean, after 9 games, obviously that penalty kill percentage is going to go up, but it's alarming. It really is. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen the penalty kill this futile in a long time to start a season. And you have to consider also the personnel that has changed. And it goes back to what I was talking about, you know, 3 segments ago. And you've had, you know, I believe if you look at the last 3 goals that have been given up, Mark Scheifele's been on for 2 of them. Or sorry, Blake Wheeler's been on for 2 of them, I think. And then you had Kyle Connor that was on for 1 of them. Kyle Connor's not a guy that, you know, we expect to be out there a lot on the penalty kill. Scheifele and Wheeler are often a pair of guys. But when you're talking about, you know, Anthony Boteto and Dmitry Kulikov, you know, all due respect to Anthony Boteto, he's not a guy that you want out there killing penalties. I mean, you want Josh Morrissey out there. You want Tucker Pullman out there. Right now, that, to me, is a pair that is working. And, you know, I think Neil Pionk has also continued to impress me, even though, you know, Neil Pionk, I think, ideally is a guy that you want playing second pair, third pair minutes, not top pair minutes. But I think the point is right now, I mean, the personnel is an issue. And Adam Lowry and Andrew Copp are great penalty killers. They really are. So
is it a personnel issue or is it a...
I think it's a personnel issue on the back end.
Or is it a strategy issue, Dave? Because I look at this penalty kill and when I watch it, it seems like it's both passive and doesn't block any shots, which is a pretty bad duo of problems to have when you're talking about a penalty kill. You either need to be aggressive and then, you know, if you get burned, so be it. But to be passive and not blocking shots from getting through to your goaltender just seems like it's a terrible problem to have.
Well, Coach Maurice lamented that after the game, talked about how they had so few block shots.
The game against Arizona, he said they only had, what, 4 block shots?
4 block shots. And of course, and that's, you know, and it's interesting, right? Because, look, especially when you've got guys who are your you know, your high offense guys, you really want them blocking shots. That's not obviously an ideal usage. You want Blake Wheeler suffering some sort of injury because he had to block a shot, which is why it's not the most ideal to have one of your top offensive guys killing penalties. Of course, they're smart guys. They know where guys are thinking. So that's part of the reason why you want to have them on there. But like at the same time, you risk injury. But at the same, you know, having said that, you know what, if you're a penalty killer, you know what your responsibility is. And you can't be passive and you can't allow these shots through. It's interesting because the Jets have become a more disciplined team. They're averaging, like, I think 2 less penalties.
I think they're the least penalized team in the entire NHL.
Right. So it's interesting that even though their PK isn't very successful right now, they've been successful in taking less penalties,
which is an anomaly because last year their penalty kill was average at best and they took way too many penalties.
But look, I mean, we just talked about this with Trevor Kidd. We talked about it earlier, guys. I mean, look at the guys that you've taken out of out of the lineup, but the guys who are no longer in the lineup. You're talking about Dustin Byfuglien. You're talking about Ben Chiarot. Brendan Lemieux is a guy, you know, that you could throw in there that took a lot of penalties. But, I mean, Buff, a lot of penalties. Mm-hmm. Chiarot, a lot of penalties. I mean, even Trouba, he's a guy that, you know, takes some penalties. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense that they're taking less penalties this year. But I agree with what you're saying. You'd think just by the sheer numbers, you take less penalties, less goals are going to be scored. But not when your percentage of killing penalties is 55%.
Well, the seam pass that the Islanders completed to lead to Barzal's one-timer, you know, to tie the game on Thursday night. I mean, you could have driven a truck through that seam. There was bad positioning. You're letting passes go. I mean, everyone knows, you know, that in the league right now, most teams are always trying to complete that seam pass. The Jets will always try and do it as well, with Wheeler set up on one side trying to deliver the seam pass across the ice to Laine to get rid of it, to get his one timer. Every other team is doing everything in their power to get rid of that seam pass and to eliminate it from getting through. And I'm sure the Jets also don't want it to happen. But the players are so stretched out. They're not boxing down. They're not collapsing at all. You got two guys who are way too close to the defense at the top of the line. You got two guys who are way too low, leading this entire middle of the ice wide open for that pass to be completed.
Right.
It's a structure issue. It's a personnel issue. It's a confidence issue right now. This Jets penalty kill needs to go right back to the drawing board to square one, I think, Ezzie.
Yeah, and you know, I go back to the game against the Coyotes. The game against the Coyotes bothered me more than the game on Thursday night, because I thought the Jets, for the most part, probably played a very solid 30 to 35 minutes in that game, whereas I didn't think they were very good in general against the Coyotes. But, you know, I mentioned earlier, it was Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor, if you remember, the goal that Nick Schmaltz scored. They scored two goals in the second period. Dvorak got the first one, and the Dvorak goal didn't bother me as much. That's just a bad break. Morrissey puts it in his own net. I mean, nobody's going to sit here and blame Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey is their best penalty killer on defense. Obviously, Connor Hellebuck is their best penalty killer, as most goalies are on a penalty kill, but the goal that Nick Schmaltz scored probably was the goal that bothered me, because you had Wheeler and Connor as the high forwards, and Nick Schmaltz just, if you remember, just basically walks in. And I mean, Nick Schmaltz is a former 20-goal scorer with the Hawks. He can shoot the puck. So to me, that was, when you talk about, you know, that's something that is always pointed out at any level of hockey with a penalty kill. If the penalty kill is struggling, you say, well, it's not aggressive enough, or, you know, you're giving the opposition too much time and space, right? But to me, it's the time and space and the passivity. Is it passiveness or passivity?
I would think it would be passiveness, but I mean, whatever. I know what your point is.
I'll look it up on dictionary.com, but the Jets penalty kill has definitely been a little bit too passive, and I think it's also a function of the personnel that you have out there.
Well, then they're not maximizing the potential
on
of the
defense,
personnel.
On defense specifically. I don't think you want at any point Anthony Boteto killing penalties for you in an ideal world.
I would agree with that. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' lack of an identity. You know, they asked Blake Wheeler about it. He wasn't able to pinpoint it. How much of a concern is that 10 games through the 2019-20 season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I don't know. Weebs? I don't know. I wish I had a better answer. I'm not sure exactly. You know, we want to, you know, be a real good defensive team and, you know, work from there. I think we're very confident in our ability to put pucks in the net. But, you know, if you're, if you're constantly chasing the game from 2-3 back, it's you just can't do it every night.
That's Jets captain Blake Wheeler after Tuesday night's loss to the Arizona Coyotes, talking about the Jets' identity, which is very much a work in progress. Those are his words, not mine, as we are 9 games through the 2019-20 season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you live in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, in Blake Wheeler's defense,
in his defense. Okay.
I'm having trouble with my big words today, Drew.
That's okay. You've been up since very early this morning.
Yeah. Well, it's ridiculous. I was telling you off air, I was up at 2:30.
Yeah.
3:30.
Yeah.
And at a certain
But those
point,
are all the times you had to get up to pee. Those had nothing to do with your kids.
No, but like Ruben just decided that he didn't want to sleep for longer than half an hour yesterday. Like, so I don't even know. I probably was just up the entire night and didn't sleep at all, and I was probably sleepwalking. But anyways, in Blake Wheeler's defense, you ask him about what the team's identity is after a pretty demoralizing 4-2 loss to the Coyotes. I mean, I just... What kind of answer are you going to get from him? I mean, we talked.
Shouldn't you? Well, hang on.
I mean, it's a question that shouldn't be asked after a game. And I don't know who asked it. I'm not trying to pick on the person who asked it, but what team, with the exception of maybe a handful of teams, I think there are a lot of teams that are trying to find their identity right now.
Why don't teams know their identity?
They know what their identity is.
You know, to be in Wheeler's defense or defense, I would say, I'm actually with Ezzy on this one. I
thought you'd defend me.
I always do. But I honestly find that the one thing about him, at least, you got to give him credit. He's not going to give you some sort of cliche answer. You know, if you ask him a question, he's going to give you some insight, and you might not like his response. But the reality is, you know, so I can appreciate when he says, I don't know. I have no problems with a guy who says, we're not sure. We're still forging that to that point.
But do you agree with me, though, Dave? Isn't that a question that you want to ask him after practice? Like, after a game, I mean, you know that that Blake Wheeler is going to talk to the media after every game. That's his role. He's the captain. We know that. And I think he does a good job at it. Sometimes does he get a little short with the media? Yes. But you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's going to be upset after losses. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you have to have questions should be asked about the game. And look, Trevor Kidd was on two segments ago, and he talked about it. The identity of this team is still speed and skill.
Do you find them to be an overwhelmingly fast team up and down the roster, though, right now?
Yes.
Still?
Are they a little less fast than they were? I mean, first off, Nikolaj Ehlers, we know, one of the fastest players in
no
the
question.
League. Kyle Connor, fast player. I mean, Josh Morrissey from the back end.
Do they play fast? You know, I was, you know, Thursday's game, I was in.
Blake Wheeler's a fast player.
But do they play fast? On Thursday's game, I was watching Thursday's game.
They were playing fast in the first period.
In the first period, fine, they were playing fast. Their path to victory on a nightly basis is necessarily clear. This is how our game must look on a nightly basis for us to win.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a good point, because when you talk about, you know, some of their wins, like you look at the New Jersey win, that was a come from behind win.
New Jersey win is an anomaly. That's a game where 99.9% of the time you don't win that game. The Jets were fortunate. They get all the credit for the comeback in that game, but truthfully, they should be another game below 500, because most teams don't give up four goal leads in that manner.
And Dave, I think you'd probably agree the best game that we've seen from the Jets was probably that win at home against the Wild. That was a couple of weeks back.
I would say the win in Pittsburgh even.
Yeah, or the win in Pittsburgh. I mean, there have only been four,
right,
and we've already talked about three of them. So, I mean, I would say probably the game against Minnesota a couple of weeks back, that was, I believe, 5-2 that the Jets won.
Well, that was a 2-2 game until they scored two goals in 30 seconds in the third period in a 4-on-4 situation.
But, you know, I actually thought their Islanders game was a pretty good game. I mean, look, they had a very good first period. Varlamov played very well, kept his team in it, and that's all you can ask from a team that's kind of getting shelled a bit. And then, you know, they got the two goals, which we've discussed already. So, I mean, that game was, I thought, was getting back closer to what you want to see from the Jets. But again, you know, is there going to be some sort of catch-all, you know, cliche answer? I mean, sure, he could have given that, and then maybe that answers the question. But I think, like, again, I think much like the rest of the team, he's still trying to find that. Because, look, if you add Dustin Byfuglien to this lineup, that changes the chemistry. That changes the identity of this group. So, I mean, you know, to me, it's a function of, you're looking at this squad and you're thinking to yourself, okay, well, we know what they are from the forward perspective. But defensively, there's so much changeover. I mean, like, you know, Drew, you talked about it in one of the previous segments. When you list all those players that are missing, I mean, that is not a insignificant thing. That is a monumental change to lose that many defensemen from your starting lineup in 1 year. So, I mean, your identity isn't necessarily going to be determined through one training camp in the first 9 games. And again, I think the fact that they've played this many games this early in the season, you know, maybe their pace will slow down a little bit. They're going to have, you know,
if it doesn't, they're going to be done their year before the end of December.
Right. But what I'm saying is they'll get more practice time in. Yeah. They'll be able to forge that a little bit better. And we'll see if this team can kind of come together and figure that, you know, as long as they stick together, they'll be all right.
Well, they'd like that quote to be back in their dressing room again, because that's a big problem, of course, that they're missing. And you know, what Dustin Byfuglien brings to the table. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, discussing the Jets' lack of identity, or the Jets' struggle to find their identity early in the season.
Yeah, and you know, Drew, we've been doing this show for, you know, almost 11 years. You know, every time we talk about the identity, it kind of, you know, gets me a little worked up, because it's such it's such a cliche thing in
keep
sports.
Stealing people's identities. No, but, that's what happens.
But realistically, Lo, if you look at, you know, the top teams in the NHL, and I'm not talking about the teams right now. I'm talking about, you know, the Bostons, the Tampa Bays. I mean, you could, if you want to throw in Carolina in there, if you want to throw in Colorado Toronto.
The upper echelon teams.
All of those teams are going to tell you, a big part of our identity is speed and skill. That's what the NHL and is all about right now. I mean, sure, you'd maybe have, you know, a few teams that would maybe throw in hardworking, or, you know, maybe a more physical team, like a team like the Coyotes relies more on their defensive structure, their hardworking ability. They don't have, you know, the big names like Tampa Bay, Toronto, or Boston. But the point is, I think one thing that you said that resonated with me, you know, this segment is, what is the Jets' path to a victory on most nights? And I think a couple of years ago, when the Jets went on that run to the Western Conference Final, that path was pretty clear.
It was possession. The Jets at that right. In that year where they went to the Western Conference Final, the Jets were a dominant possession team. You remember the TLC line would cycle teams to death, and then they'd throw out the top line, and they would continue to cycle teams to death. Right now, the Jets are, I mean, the Connor Kopp and Ehlers line had a great possession game on Thursday night.
It's by far their best line right now.
Right now, it's the best performing line. I agree with that. But right now, I just don't see them being difficult to play against. I don't see them being that much faster than a lot of the other teams they play against. So you wonder, you know, where are they? You know, where are they imposing their will on the opposition?
Well, and that's why, I mean, your blueprint for success can't be coming back in games when you're down a goal or two goals or three goals and scoring a couple goals on the power play. Like, that's why, you know, you hear Trevor Kidd, you hear, you know, a lot of people on this station, Paul Edmonds, whoever it is, talking about, you know, Kevin O has talked about it on the pre and post game show. You can't outscore your problems. And that's how the Jets have won this year, as opposed to getting a lead and maybe hanging on to that lead. Maybe we've only seen that a couple of times, right? We saw that against the Penguins, and we saw that against the Wild. With those two games are the only games where the Jets have, you know, gotten the lead, held on to it, and it's been relatively low scoring. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about, you know, all of the turnover you've seen on defense, we know that the Jets are going to give up a lot of shots this year. But, you know, you've got to excel in air. You have to be better on the penalty kill, and you have to be better as a five-man unit. And these are things that are thrown out as cliches, but it's true. Because you don't have Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, Tyler Myers, those were three really good right-shot defensemen. And you can say whatever you want about Tyler Myers, but he's really improved the Canucks defense as well. So whether you're a Myers fan or not, he was a really good third-pair defenseman. Maybe he's not a great second-pair defenseman, but for the Jets, he was a great third-pair defenseman. So the point is, when you don't have these big horses on the back end and you're putting out, you know, Dmitry Kulikov, Anthony Boteto, 17, 18, 19 minutes.
Carl Dahlstrom.
You're going to depend a lot more on that back pressure from your forward. So overall, yes. I mean, the Jets are probably a little less fast, a little less physical, but that means that you...
a little less successful.
Well, I mean, right now, and it's early. It's only 9 games. I really want to see where this team is at the 20-game mark or the 25-game mark before I completely write off the season. And I wouldn't write off the season at that point either, because look what the Blues did. But the point is, I think they're still trying to find their way. They haven't been consistent. And another cliche that's thrown out a lot is consistency. But if you look at the Jets' 9 games, from one game to another, what are we expecting? I mean, what type of Jets team is going to show up? And, you know, tomorrow against the Edmonton Oilers, they better show up for 3 periods, because right now this Oilers team is one of the most dangerous teams in the league.
7-1 Oilers, first place in the Western Conference.
And we'll talk more about the Jets and Oilers as we move throughout the show. When we come back, we talk about the forward lines with Brian Little's seemingly imminent return to the Jets roster. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
And I've liked Andrew. I mean, Andrew Kopp has played very, very well. I think both the guys on the wings, you know, for the most part, Nicky's been strong. Like, he's had some good games for us, and Kyle's kind of building, coming back in. I think with the three of them, you know, there is some chemistry there between Kyle and Brian. And some of it's just having spent some time together, they know where each other's going to be. So it was a real learning experience to have Andrew there. And they have a little more of a comfort level with Brian.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice. That was after practice on Wednesday when it seemed like Brian Little was going to be in the lineup on Thursday night. We, of course, now know that he wasn't. No word yet if he'll be on the lineup tomorrow evening as the Jets and the Oilers will do battle. A game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290. Jets head to the practice ice in about 40 minutes' time. So we'll bring you all the latest news regarding the Winnipeg Jets when we get it from practice at Bell MTS Place. It seemed, when Brian Little was expected to go in the lineup on Thursday, that he was going to immediately slot in as the second-line center between Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers. We know that Andrew Kopp has been playing that role. We know Kopp, Ehlers, and Connor had a great game possession-wise, a great game by the eye test, a great game all around on Thursday night against the Islanders. Make an argument for Brian Little immediately taking over the second-line center role.
No, I can't, and the shot share, if you like the fancy stats, was 22-4.
Dominant.
For the Kopp Ehlers Connor line. 22-4.
That's dominant.
Right? So and that isn't the only good game that they've had. They've been pretty successful since they were put together. And, you know, we talked about that as kind of a storyline, Dave, going into the season about, you know, is Andrew Kopp going to finally get that opportunity in the top six? And he's getting the opportunity in the top six, partly because Little hasn't played a regular season game yet, but I think he's done an excellent job. I don't think that, you know, you're going to expect 25 goals and 60 points out of Andrew Kopp, but what Andrew Kopp has brought to that, first off, he's a great possession player. His advanced stats are really good, and it's more so how responsible he is defensively. And, you know, when you talk about Kyle Connor and Nikolai Ehlers, I mean, these are guys that you expect to be in the offensive zone for the majority of the time that they're on the ice. And Ehlers, we know, is a driver. Ehlers is a driver of a line. And I think Connor, you know, the goals are going to come. I don't think, you know, he's not necessarily getting the results right now. I mean, he's had some nice goals.
Kyle Connor's expected goals right now are, I think, right at the top of the league almost.
And he had a beauty the other night. I mean, that spin around, we've seen that spin around backhand that he roofed up. That was over Darcy Kemper.
But he's underperforming what his analytical numbers would say he should be at.
The goals will come. I mean, I think we all expect him to be around, you know, 30, 35 goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to necessarily put that, you know, target on him, but the reality is he's already done it in his young career, right, Dave? So the way that they've played as a three-man unit, I think you have to explore Brian Little on the wing on the third line.
I think you're right. I think the issue, of course, is that, again, not that you have to hold a coach to what he said in one availability, but Maurice said because of the fact that Brian Little's come back from the concussion, you want to keep him in that familiar role as a center. So to me, if we're not talking about breaking up Kopp, Ehlers, and Connor, which I agree with you doesn't really make a lot of sense based on their success, then what is it? I mean, what makes sense, obviously, is probably to take Bork out of the lineup and then somehow start, do you move around that third and fourth lines? Because the reality is the Jets have depth at forward. If you now have Little there, again, I don't know how you do it exactly and whether you put, because you have a lot of guys who can play center. You've got Gustafson, Roslovic, Lowry, and Little. Those are four guys who are centers who would be on in your bottom six. But the reality is, you know, again, that gives you a lot of depth. It gives you a lot of opportunity. It gives you a lot of guys who are defensively responsible. And they can put the puck in that. So to me, it's a function of, you know, if you remove Bork and you've got that lineup in there, I mean, again, I wouldn't probably fool around with that second line as it's currently constructed. So you got to figure out, you know, do you put Little on the wing? And, you know, despite what you said, put Little on the wing with one of those two lines and really give four lines and make sure you're rolling those four lines.
Well, we see Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers as being a successful line, a line that should work more nights than not. We see Line A, Scheifele, and Wheeler being a line that should work more nights than not. Do you not also think that a line of Little, Lowry, and Roslovic should work? And
we've seen that line together before.
And should better their competition with Little on the wing more nights than not?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So then you have three lines that should be better than your competition.
Well, and it's like Dave said, when you have Brian Little in the lineup, this is only good things because it allows you to then play your fourth line more. Like, I think Mason Appleton only got 6 minutes of ice time, if I'm not mistaken, in the last game versus who did they play last? I can't even remember the Islanders. I was going to say the Coyotes, but I think when you have Mason Appleton on the fourth line, that should not be considered a demotion for Mason Appleton. I mean, if anything, that is a sign of the depth that this team had. That was never an issue this season if you have Matty Perreault and you have, you know, Mason Appleton on your fourth line, and I'm not sure, you know,
if your fourth line is Perreault, Gustafson, and Appleton,
right?
You know, Perreault is a pretty good line driver.
The only thing is, we know Gustafson's probably not going to stick around, so I just don't think that's long term.
But I'm talking about in the here and the now. I'm talking about tomorrow night against the Edmonton Oilers.
You could also have Roslovic at center, even though at this point I think you got to keep him on the wing.
He was flying. I thought he was noticeable, and he was flying on Thursday night against the Islanders. I just don't understand why immediately you would throw Brian Little back into that number two spot where you have a line that's being successful. You can ease him in on the wing. You know,
right.
Every year for the last 2 years at the trade deadline, you go out and you acquire a second line center, and you tell Brian Little that you're no longer good enough to be our second line center, and you have to go play on the wing.
I don't know that they would say that, but
they implied, you know, they're saying they need him to play a different role. So you can imply that that's what they're saying when they move him onto the wing oftentimes. And sure, it was injury related, you know, to some degree at the end of the season. But right now you have a line that works with Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers. Why change it up right now?
And I don't think more. Well, and we'll see what the lines are at practice here, guys. And if Brian Little is an option, we'll be able to tell our listeners that, you know, in the next hour, maybe even half an hour. But when you talk about, you know, the lines, I mean, we're kind of playing, you know, the role of Coach Maurice here and getting our blender out. But the reality is, you know, that's up to the coaching staff to figure out, because you have the personnel. It's, you know, finding the right mix, because I think if Brian Little is going to stay at center, it will probably be on the third line between. You're probably going to have, you know, Jack Roslovic on the wing of that line. And then, you know, are you going to have Matty Perreault? Is it going to be Perreault, Little, Roslovic? And then Lowry centering that fourth line with Mason Appleton?
If you have Lowry, Little, and Roslovic as a line, that's going to be a smart line. That's going to be a well-positioned line. That's going to be a line that can play on both sides of the ice.
Yep.
And that should be a successful line,
yes.
Which means you should have three successful forward lines,
yes.
Never mind your fourth line, which I also think would be pretty okay.
But you also have to find that right mix as well.
I don't know that Connor, Little, and Ehlers will be as successful as Connor, Kopp, and Ehlers.
Well, and I also think, Brian Little is a guy who's played 13 seasons, I think, in the NHL at this point. And, look, the previous two, he played 82 games.
Yeah.
But he hasn't played in 9 games now so far. You know, to me, that's significant. That's the amount of, you know, and obviously wasn't ready to go the last game. And they're being cautious, because that's smart. But why put that pressure on him?
Ease him into the lineup by playing him on the wing.
So, and also in a diminished role, which he can increase based on play. But again, Andrew Kopp has done nothing to not maintain his right to be at that second line center position at this point.
Dave, I just love that we're talking about, you know, Little as a 2C or a 3C or a 3 wing, because it seems like, you know, the certainties here in Winnipeg this time of year are, you know, the weather, construction, and, you know, whether or not Brian Little should be the second line center, right? Like, it seems like we've been talking about this for 4 years now.
I just don't know why you change things up at this point in time right now. To your point, Dave, why not ease him back into the lineup? Why not, you know, again, the numbers. You cited the possession numbers of that Jets second line on Thursday night. That's dominant. Why change something that's working right there just because a player comes back into the lineup? Ease him in, and maybe, and I think it will be a successful line, maybe a line of Roslovic, Lowry, and Little will be very successful. I mean, I just don't understand the logic in immediately tearing up what you've built over 9 games. When we come back, Lisa Dillman of The Athletic is going to join us. The LA Kings are in town on Tuesday night to face the Jets. We'll touch base with Lisa, get an update on what's happening in the team from La La Land. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.